I'm probably the least qualified person to give a talk on the S-transform here, especially in the continuous domain. But here you go. My background is from signal processing. I'm working atmospheric physics, and I use it to analyze data and try to figure out what's going on in the physical systems we're measuring. I'm going to start with the definition of the Fourier transform, just to show the notation that I use. I'm almost always working in the discrete case. We have the discrete Fourier transform here. Everything's very nicely behaved. And I always pull out the 2 pi from the frequency. In geophysics, it's natural to think of periods and wavelengths. And it's just easy to convert to a frequency rather than a radial frequency. And everyone's familiar with this here. That's the discrete Fourier transform of a time series H. And from the signal processing point of view, the motivation to look at a time frequency representation is just to measure the spectral components that exist in your data and try to figure out when they are happening. This is a couple time series here that have different characteristics. This is the amplitude spectrum of both of them, which are identical because it's just a time-reversed time series. The information of when the low frequencies are occurring and when the high frequencies are occurring here is kind of mixed up in the phase of the Fourier transform, but it's not readily available. So we come up with some techniques to kind of pull that information out. So there's a few ways to kind of derive the S transform. One is just to take your time series, multiply it by a windowing function, and perform the Fourier transform on it. Now, if you let this windowing function allow it to translate, so you're looking at the spectrum at different times, and we're going to use a Gaussian here, which I'll explain why in a little bit. You just have your time series multiplied by a localizing in time function, and then you have your Fourier kernel, and that produces a representation in time and frequency, and I've kept in the width of the window, which gives you the resolution in time. So that's a function of 3 variables, which is kind of unwieldy. So one way to simplify it is just to put in a functional relationship for the width, make it equal to 1 period of the sinusoid that is being localized. And when you do that, you get the S transform. So there's your time series, the Gaussian window, the width, this is the normalization factor, so the Gaussian window is always has a unit area. The window is translating in time, and that's selecting the time that you're getting the local spectrum for, and then you get the Fourier kernel there. And I should point out, and I'll point it out over and over again, that the window translates in time, the modulation does not. And that leads to the absolutely referenced phase and all the nice characteristics of the S-transform. Another way to look at it is to treat it as a convolution of 2 functions, where you have, this is going to be your time series in another term, and then that's your localizing time window. So if you write this out as a convolution, what we do is take the time series and the modulation and combine those together. And then that's correlated with the window function in time here. And again, the key step here is that the modulation goes with the time series and this time is fixed. And that does not translate. Again, giving the absolutely referenced phase information. The only thing that translates is a unit area window that localizes in time. So there's 2 distinct steps in doing a time frequency representation, selecting the frequency with that modulation factor and selecting the time with the Gaussian window there. From that previous expression, you just use a convolution theorem, and it's the multiplication in the Fourier domain. That's what we call a voice Gaussian, and that's selecting the frequency band for a particular voice, and then that's the spectrum of your time series. And the key here is that the spectrum is being shifted for each voice frequency F here that we're selecting. So that means, you know, the signal at a particular frequency is always being moved to the DC level, and that will give you a constant back in the voice if that's what your signal is. And with this multiplication, it's just the inverse Fourier transform from alpha back to tau of that function by the convolution theorem. And that's actually the form that's used in the discrete case. It's an efficient calculation to do. Another way of deriving it is to start out a wavelet transform where it's written in this kind of general term. Usually it's divided by the dilation place where it has two different factors. You take a wavelet transform with a particular wavelet that we'll define based on the Gaussian, and you apply this phase correction to it. I think that's how it was originally defined, and I think it's kind of unfortunate because it looks like it's a pretty trivial modification of a rather normal wavelet, but it really has an important implication on all the characteristics of the S transform. And I think a lot of people read that and kind of dismiss it, and I know the reviewer of the paper rejected it because of that. But basically, when you put that phase correction in, what that has done is when we apply it to the wavelet here, the translation T minus tau gets knocked out, and we have the again the Gaussian window translating in time. The modulation is fixed. And one note: this is if you look at the Gaussian window as the as a wavelet, it doesn't have a zero mean, which is the admissibility condition for a wavelet with a continuous wavelet transform. So this is not a wavelet. These functions don't translate. They're not self-similar. They're not simply translations and dilations of a mother wavelet. When you step to the discrete case, just a straightforward application of the previous equation, there we have the spectrum of your time series. You apply the voice Gaussian window and then your inverse Fourier transform, discrete Fourier transform back to time domain, and that populates a voice. And then you are selecting another voice N, and you repeat that. It's a very efficient calculation. You can use, you know, FFT and get the N log calculations per point of the result, just like an FFT gives you. In the practical case, yeah, usually we'll run out of space before you run out of time because it's such an efficient calculation to populate those voices. And in the discrete case here, we got this little n squared at zero, which might cause a problem, but the zero voice is constant over time, so you just take the average, fill the voice with that, and then when you're doing the inverse, you get the exact inverse in the discrete case. That's shown here. You just sum over time of that definition. The rearranging the sums, you get the, you know, you're just summing up the Fourier sinusoids, and by the orthogonal property, that gives you a delta function, which pops out, and that leaves you with the Fourier spectrum identically. So averaging over time gives you the Fourier spectrum exactly, the real part and the complex part. Many TFRs will satisfy the marginals, which means that if you add up over time, you get the power, but this is better. If you look at just the power, that's only half the information in your time series. You know, this gives you all the information, the real part and the imaginary part together. So that's just the definition of the inverse transform. You add up over time, you have the spectrum, and then you inverse discrete Fourier transform back to the time domain, you recover your time series exactly. It leads to a possible definition for the fundamental principle of local spectral analysis. Probably more appropriate to say it's a fundamental principle of the S transform, and that the time average of the local spectra should give you the global spectra exactly. It should be something like the S-transform, which satisfies that, can be thought of as a generalization of a Fourier transform to a case of non-stationary data. And a number of very nice properties fall out of that because of that. So why do we choose a Gaussian window? There's a number of reasons. One is if you look at the width of a time frequency cell, it is uniquely minimized if you calculate like a center of gravity size of that. It's uniquely minimized by the Gaussian window. Another nice feature is that the Fourier transform of a Gaussian gives you another Gaussian function, so you have this symmetry in your time frequency plane. So you don't have, you know, a boxcar one way and side lobes ringing off in another direction. And a very important feature when you're analyzing data in the discrete case here is that there is no side lobes with the Gaussian window. So that means if you have a local maximum in your S-transform amplitude, that it's a real peak, it's a real signal, and it's not simply an artifact of your sampling process. And a great deal of Fourier transform analysis in the discrete case deals with treating side lobes and calculating significance of peaks and that type of thing. Now, of course, because it has no side lobes, it has a wider bandwidth. That's an appropriate trade-off to take. So the S-transform, its key feature is that it uniquely combines a progressive resolution where the resolution in frequency gets better, or in time gets better at the higher frequencies, and the resolution in frequency for the lower frequencies is higher. Basically, the resolution in time depends on one period of the sinusoid that you're localizing. And here's an example of why it's important when you're analyzing data. If you have a simple signal here, it's just a sinusoid, it has a characteristic resolution in the frequency space. So this is a time series, that's the amplitude spectrum over a range of frequencies. So there's a certain width here. Now if you measured longer in time, so you have the exact same signal here, but now we've zero padded, you've increased your sampling in the frequency domain, but you have not increased the resolution of that signal. So when you're looking at data, just measuring longer doesn't give you necessarily better resolution. It depends on the signal and whether the signal actually exists. In the third case here, the signal exists for a longer time. It's the same time series as this case here. Because the signal exists, you get a better resolution. So it's appropriate when you first look at data and you don't know what the signal is like to try to get the best time resolution as a first look, and then only when the case where the signal exists for a long time can you increase the resolution of that signal. So progressive resolution is a good idea analyzing data. The absolutely referenced phase is a key feature of the S-transform. And basically, what that means is that for a given point in the time frequency space at T-naught and F-naught, the phase at that point is relative to the zero time, no matter where you are in the time frequency space. And that's as opposed to a wavelet transform where there's a locally referenced phase. The phase at any point in the time frequency domain is referenced to the middle of your wavelet, which is translating in time. Now, as a result of this, or as a simple example, say your time series is just a constant sinusoid. The phase of the S-transform for that voice, F-naught, of the signal, for all time is constant and equal to the phase of your signal here. So that's what the absolutely referenced phase means. And one feature that's unique to the S-transform is you can just pull a signal, extract it directly from the data. If you do something, if it's a quasi-monochromatic signal, you can just go along the peak. You can read off the amplitude, which is just the absolute value of the S-transform, read off the peak frequency of it, and then read the phase. And this is the, because this is the, you know, absolutely referenced phase, it's the proper phase. So you just plug that directly into amplitude, you know, times your cosine, where you have your frequency and phase, and that will extract that signal for you. So it's almost like you're doing a very precise time frequency filtering operation here. But this is an example where you have a time series here of a couple hundred points, and there's a few components mixed in there. That's the S transform of this signal, and that's the same time axis here as here. So you can see there's some noise added in. There's a high frequency signal that exists for the entire time, and then there's a chirping signal here. Now if I just go along and pull off those values along the peak here, plug it into that equation on the previous slide, you extract that component of the signal. And you've also kind of extracted a lot of the noise, or left a lot of the noise in the other parts of it. So you get this nice clean extraction of this frequency with a chirping signal. So it's can't be done with just a simple filtering operation. Well, actually, this could be done with a simple operation, but in general, it can't necessarily be. That's the S transform of the extracted signal. So you can see you're getting the chirp signal right out of it. Another interesting feature of the S transform is that each voice is essentially if you ignore the fact that the frequency is shifting, it's essentially a bandpass filtered analytic signal. So if I shift the spectrum here with a little change of variables, it's just spectrum times a voice Gaussian where it's shifted, and we're doing a Fourier transform. In a normal filtering operation, you're going to multiply the spectrum by a function that's symmetric around zero, has a positive and negative frequency. Here, there's only the one peak of this window. So we're kind of localizing on the positive frequencies there and throwing away the negative frequencies. And that action is the same as a Hilbert transform of the original time series in the time domain. So the voice is a Hilbert transform, and because of that, we can look at instantaneous amplitude and phase for each voice. So you got a number of nice features of the S transform, and I'll talk more of it later. But one of the main drawbacks is it's producing a point in the time frequency plane for each time sample and each frequency sample as originally defined. And as the number of points gets large, it becomes a problem computationally. So how can you make a more efficient S-transform representation? This shows the action of the S-transform. Here's a time series of 250 points. That's the amplitude of the S-transform. Same time axis here, that's zero up to the Nyquist frequencies, and you got a chirping signal that's obvious in the time domain. This shows the amplitude of the spectrum as with the same y-axis of frequency, so it's like a spectrum tilted on its side. And this traces the amplitude of the time series. The action of the S-transform is to apply a voice Gaussian to shift the frequency to make this a zero frequency, and then inverse Fourier transform and populate this voice. And then here's another example. At higher frequencies, you have a wider window. You apply it to the spectrum and inverse Fourier transform, and you populate this voice. So for one of these voices, we're localized in this region and we're falling off to small values, although not zero here. But if we just suppose we apply a boxcar out here where the values are small and leave the rest of the spectrum as zeros, and then because they're zeros, let's just throw them away and focus on this smaller subsets of points, perform the inverse Fourier transform on this smaller subspace, and populate a voice here. And of course, since you have less points in the spectrum, you have less points in time here. That approach actually works. So you can write down what it is you're doing when we try to do that. We just have a sum of sinusoids. We're centered at new here. It's our voice, basically is the voice thing. We have a certain bandwidth, beta, and what we're doing is applying kind of a shift and a phase correction like we have with the S transform to it, and doing an inverse Fourier transform. And if you calculate this up and figure out what this function is, turns out you can create a basis of local Fourier functions that is an orthonormal representation of the time frequency space consistent with all the characteristics of the S transform. If you take that equation and just kind of collect the terms, this is what you get. And you have this kind of a phase factor correction, which is very similar to what's applied to the S transform in the definition, starting at a wavelet and correcting, phase correcting the wavelet transform. So just do some simple algebra here and substitute in some values. We got a well-known identity here that we can use. If we apply this to that equation, we get this form, and you just go through a few steps here that are pretty straightforward to get a definition of these basis functions. So there, just rearranging terms and spreading that out, writing down. I don't really know what form is better. It just seemed that if I worked it out like that, it was easier to code up. So basically, you get this expression, which is a general definition of these orthonormal local Fourier basis functions. So we have some parameters here that were shown in that first thing, where this is a voice, that's the center frequency that you're selecting. That's the width of the bandwidth of the voice that you're analyzing. And this tau is a, it's not a translation, but it is a time localization parameter. So basically, we have this spectrum, we're just partitioning it into vector subspaces, performing the FFT in that subspace, and there are beta elements in that subspace that produces beta points in the time. So tau is actually going to run from 0 to beta minus 1. There was, on the previous page, there is this possible 0 here, but that's not a problem. If you work it out, the limit is basically comes up to the normalization factor. And that's where that part comes from here. So this is the definition of the basis functions. And, it's just like the sinusoids of a Fourier transform. We can apply it with a series of inner products with your time series. So, your time series times these basis functions will give you a kind of a local spectrum representation. There are some rules on how to make sure that this is always an orthogonal representation of your time frequency space. And it's basically that you sample each Fourier frequency once and only once. So when you're partitioning it out, your partitions always touch each other, and they don't overlap, and then you have an earth. And because in each subspace you're just doing a Fourier transform, those are always orthogonal, so the entire set of basis functions will be orthogonal. To actually apply it, you have to make another rule on how you're going to partition up the frequency space, and a common one with wavelets is just to do octave partitioning. And that's just defined here. Basically, we have an octave parameter that goes up to the log of n. And then we can calculate what the voice center frequency will be, what the bandwidth will be, and how many samples in time we're getting in that bandwidth. And there's some special rules for the DC component here. The frequency is 0 and bandwidth just 1. That gives us the constant mean for DC. And then the first harmonic is also has a bandwidth of 1 because one period of the harmonic lasts the entire time series. And then if you just follow this up, you can substitute that in and you get some large expression here of the basis functions. And when you actually get to coding this up and running it, it's extremely simple, even though it looks there's a lot of terms in there. So here's an illustration of what these, call them the DOST functions, the discrete orthonormal S transform, what these functions look like in the time domain. The thick line's the real part, the dotted line's the imaginary part, there's a thin gray envelope, and this is for n equals 100, the voice is 24, so that's the frequency of 24 over 100. The bandwidth is 16 elements. And then I'm just selecting a translation that's sort of in the middle. So you can see that the things to point out here are that these are not translations as you go to different tau. You know, here it's flipped upside down. And another thing to notice is that, you know, they're not just a toggle with that e to the I pi tau term. I mean, these things are actually have a different appearance of how they're sampled in the discrete domain. Here we're actually going up to the amplitude in the real part. Here you don't. It's split between the imaginary and the real part. And that kind of lack of a translation is the same thing as the absolutely referenced phase, and it's the same thing as it's the same characteristic that allows you to average over time and get the Fourier transform exactly. That's all related. If you're translating along here, you lose that other property. This is how the DOST functions look with different scales or different frequency ranges. And again, you know, these are not dilations of a mother wavelet at all. Here you have a constant DC term. There you have a full period constant sinusoid. Then as you get up to the higher frequency ranges, you get more localized. So you're getting better time resolution, and of course it's wider frequency resolution. This is just kind of details on how to actually calculate the octave sampling. If you're going to code it up, you got to do a little tweaking to make an fully automated general partitioning. Now, it has all the same properties that the regular S transform has, but this is in an orthonormal representation. So here's an example. Of course, the reason to go to an orthonormal representation is it's extremely efficient, and you can do the analysis of a time series with a large number of points. So here we'll take a time series with 1,000,000 points, and I've plotted up the DOST amplitudes here. This is time from 0 up to 1,000,000 or so, maybe it's 2,000,000. These are the frequencies from 0 up to the Nyquist frequency here. The time series I don't show because it just looks like a black bar, that many points in it. But there's a low frequency component followed by a medium frequency component, and then early on in time here you have a high frequency, a very high frequency. So there's low, medium, and high. It's well resolved in this representation, although there will be ringing in the just like you always have with discrete Fourier transform analysis. There are some rings, but they don't show up in this plot of it. The voices here, like this shows one voice. It's plotted out as a series of just rectangles where the signal is. The white part is no signal. That's one voice here. This range here is the next higher voice, and then this is the, again, the next octave, and then that's the final octave. So you can see that octave sampling on the linear frequency scale. But the interesting thing about this is that we're actually pulling off the phase of this signal. This plots out the voice. That's the amplitude that's shown here on the y-axis, and this is the phase of that voice. And when I created this time series, that's actually 2 radians, that's minus 1 radian, that's 2.5 radians. So you get a multi-component signal that occurs in different times and different frequencies, and we can pull out the phase of that actual signal. And the utility of being able to do that is now we can take two different time series and look at the full multi-component phase differences of each component here. And you just do a cross-spectral analysis like a standard way, except it's with the S-transform results. And then you get an amplitude and a phase, and that phase gives you the phase difference for each component of the signal. I don't think that type of analysis is possible with any other orthogonal time-frequency representation. Another thing, because we're still consistent with all the characteristics of the S-transform, and these voices are essentially analytic signals, is you can write it in terms of the amplitude and the phase, and then we can take the time derivative of the phase, which gives you the frequency shift. So within that band, you can find with great precision the frequency of the component that exists there. And that's a just kind of a generalized instantaneous frequency that can be applied to broadband signals. This term is just your voice frequency. So basically what you're measuring is the shift in frequency off the peak of your voice. And that's an illustration. It's still that same example from two slides ago. But here we have the phase that I plotted on that previous plot for the three different components, and they do the derivatives. And what you're finding is the exact frequency shift from the voice frequency to what the signal was. So you get to completely determine what that component was. And I've only plotted this where the amplitude was above a threshold. So you can do this cross-spectral analysis, and you can basically do peak finding with the instantaneous frequency and measure how that's changing in time. So another thing you can do is that this formalization kind of gives you the skeleton of what the time frequency space can look like. And we have a time series here of 1,000 points, and you can see low frequency signals and high frequency signals here. So the orthogonal S transform also only has 1,000 points, and I've plotted it out as a frequency from 0 up to the Nyquist, and that's the same time axis. And it's a very blocky, sparse representation of what's going on in the local spectrum. So what you can do is start to oversample and add in some more points. So we have progressively finer resolution of the time frequency space. So this has only n points. Here I've applied windowing to these functions, which gives you a somewhat smoother representation. And then I'm interpolating in time and frequency and adding windowing here. And now it's like 1/16th of the of what the entire full regular S transform will give you. That's shown in the bottom where you have the very smooth, you know, very redundant representation of what that signal is. So you get a very nice picture of that sinusoidal oscillation of the time series. So here there's only 1,000 points in that entire image, and here you've got 1,000 by 1,000 points. So it gives you the framework where you can start to interpolate depending on what your data looks like and get an efficient and a pretty good representation of what's going on with the local spectra. And one interesting thing you can do with this is if you start with the DOS basis functions and you just apply some rules to these to the voices, the bandwidth, and the time, basically make the bandwidth 1 everywhere and have n voices and plug this into the equation, collect up the terms, what you're going to end up with is you're not summing over bandwidth, you just have the single point, the sum goes away. And it gives you the discrete Fourier transform. So, you know, this gives you a time frequency representation that the Fourier transform is a special case of. And in fact, you can go the other way, and the time series is also a special case of the DOST. So, you know, this kind of... let me just draw a little picture here. Is it okay to erase all this? Basically, what this formulation has given is, you know, when you measure data, have a time series, it's just a vector in some n-dimensional vector space. Whether it's a time series or images or a series of time series of images or whatever it is. So in some n-dimensional vector space, and you can kind of transform it down into your time series, where this is just a little schematic of time and frequency. You have no frequency information and very precise time information. Or you can project your data onto the spectrum, where you have very precise frequency information and no time information. Or you can have any arbitrary combination of that kind of a picture. There's kind of an octave sampling. So there's always this, you take that same data, kind of transform it into any representation you want, and this kind of shows you how to do it, and you're always in an orthonormal, you know, exactly invertible representation of that data. So just to conclude that, it gives you an exact analytical definition for a basis of a time frequency space. It has direct ties with the Fourier transform, which is one of the important things we've always tried to do, like with the S transform. This DOTS representation, it doesn't average over time because it doesn't have enough points, but it does collapse exactly to the discrete Fourier transform spectrum. Basically, you have to undo, you know, the steps in which you calculated your Fourier transform to the discrete Fourier transform domain. It retains the absolutely referenced phased and the localized cross-spectral analysis and instantaneous frequency capabilities that the S-transform has. And I think in terms of the signal processing, one of the really important things that it can do is give you the framework where you can start to efficiently sample arbitrarily large data sets and get a reasonable time frequency representation. And just as the last thing to put up here, this is an example of looking at some real data. The data is just horizontal winds measured at Hawaii at a height of 90 kilometers over 16 years. So it's measured every hour over 16 years or so. So there's a couple hundred thousand points in the time series. You can apply the DOTS to this, and this is a very raw demonstration of it. It's like taking data and just applying an FFT to it and plotting that up. You know, that won't get published. You're going to apply windowing and various pre-processing to the data to get a nice picture of it. But this is the very raw representation. And the cool thing about this, so we have time here. It's going back to, I think, 91 up to somewhere in 2006. The darker color, blues and blacks, are low signal. The oranges and yellows are high signals. So what you can see is kind of solar cycle and El Nino type oscillations here. You can see annual variations in this wind. You can see Julian Madden type oscillations, interseasonal oscillations here. You get up to the planetary wave regime, where you're seeing like a 16-day wave showing up at various times along here. You're seeing like 4 or 5 day waves. So these are all important oscillations in the atmosphere. We even go up to the tidal signal along here that you can see, and the semi-diurnal tide. So it's really amazing that we can take all this data and see everything that is going on. And of course, further work needs to be done because of this very raw and blocky representation. So I guess I'll conclude there and let you all enjoy this wonderful figure for a while.